Hey everyone, it is Stephanie Postles, the host of Up Next in Commerce. Before we get into our latest interview with another e-commerce leader, I wanted to let you know that the Up Next in Commerce podcast is now available for sponsorship for the first time ever. By partnering with us, your company will be connected to interviews with the most compelling founders, CEOs, VPs, and digital leaders in the world of commerce today. You have nothing to gain but thousands of followers and millions of impressions each and every month. Reach out to me at stephanie@mission.org to see how your business can benefit from partnering with our team at Up Next in Commerce. Welcome to Up Next in Commerce, the show that takes you to the front lines of what's happening in digital, retail, and beyond, with conversations from fast-growing startups to the Fortune 500 and everything in between. You'll get a glimpse into what's next. I'm your host, Stephanie Postles, the co-founder and CEO of mission.org, and I'll be your guide through all the trends, innovations, and hot topics in the world of commerce. Today, I'm talking to Mark Matu, the co-founder of Web3 Studio at Salesforce. We went deep into the world of Web3 and talked about how it's going to change the way brands acquire, interact, and build community with their customers. Plus, we get into some fun examples of how blockchain, NFTs, and digital goods are being used right now in the world of commerce, and the mindset shifts that will need to come with this exciting evolution. But before we dive in, I want to give a quick shout out to our partners, Salesforce Commerce Cloud, who make this whole show possible. And for some amazing commerce insights, check out the second edition of their State of Commerce report at sfdc.co/commerceinsights. That's sfdc.co/commerceinsights. All right, enjoy today's episode with Mark Matu. What are business leaders thinking about when they aren't winning a business? Family, travel, the latest TV show? Yes, yes, and maybe. But how about quirky business opportunities or little discussed financial trends or maybe even plant medicine benefits and alternative wellness? Mission Daily is back, baby, and our flagship podcast is better than ever. Mission Daily is the podcast for the business builder, the thoughtful marketer, the team manager, the blue-collar worker looking for new ways to think about life, finances, and health. This is for the people who want to break the status quo and laugh a little or a lot along the way. Join me, Stephanie Postles, and my co-host, Albert Chow, as we address the subjects, thoughts, and trends that business leaders think about but don't often talk about. Tune into Mission Daily wherever you listen to your podcasts. See you there. Mark, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
I'm super excited about today's chat. I know we're going to be diving into the world of Web3. So I thought it would be a good starting point to hear, when was the moment that you knew you had to get involved in Web3? Like, where were you? What were you feeling? What was that moment?
So two different things happened almost at the same time. I was working on a presentation on the future of luxury. And I was looking at everything that Salesforce had, etc. And I realized I was not happy. I needed more. And that's when I started to dig and I started to get into the rabbit hole, as they say, of Web3 and discover that some brands were started to talk about metaverse, about NFTs, but it was, you know, really nascent. And so I added it as a section of my presentation to the industry, but that was one of the beginning. And then the time I really had to get involved is I was invited to a kind of conference roundtable, small by a bank as a research group, almost 30, 35 people on DeFi, the future of decentralized finance. Mm-hmm. And they said, and by the way, you're speaking. And I said, what do you mean I'm speaking? They said, yes, there are experts from, you know, the financial institutions, experts from crypto, and then subject matter experts. And that's why we invite you, because you are a brand expert, you're a consumer expert, and we want your point of view. So I had to dig because I had never, you know, really digged into DeFi. And I had to understand how to talk about Web3 to an audience of 30 people in a semi-intelligent way.
I love it. And what year was that, or for reference?
That was about 2 years ago, so not that long ago, but it was my acceleration curve.
Mm-hmm. I love always hearing the starting point and then thinking, okay, what you thought Web3 was a few years ago versus where you're at today. It's like a wormhole where you fall in and there's so much stuff to learn, and it's also changing so rapidly. It seems hard to keep up with all the things that are going on in this space.
Yeah, it's very true. And when I started to dig, I felt, oh, I'm so late. Mm-hmm. I'm so late.
Yeah.
And yet I realized I was still so early. And, you know, there was still so much history to be written. I always say, you know, in the world of Web3, the iPhone of Web3, or, you know, the Google of Web3, I've not been born yet. Mm-hmm. Nobody has identified those killer use cases that are going to really, you know, become prevalent. And I think that a lot of what Web3 is today is, for me, is really an underlying, you know, technology based on blockchain and smart contracts that really is very powerful. But then all the manifestations of it are going to continue to evolve.
Mm-hmm. So I love starting with definitions. And I mean, when I think about Web 1, 2, and 3, I guess I always think about time periods. Like Web 1 is from maybe, and you can correct me if you're like, that's not correct. I think of it from like 1990 to 2004. It's like the static websites. And then you've got ish like 2005. I bring it all the way up to 2020 when it's social platforms, interactivity, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. And then Web3, I think of it, you know, decentralized, open, you know, and of course all the buzzwords like NFTs and metaverse. But how would you describe where we're at today in the world of Web3?
So it's a good definition, and I fully agree with you. I often talk about Web1, Web2, Web3 as the web of read, mm-hmm. Web1, the web of read and write, Web2. You talk about the social interaction, social platforms. And the web of read, write, and own, Web3, where you can actually own assets, but also your own data and your own identity, mm-hmm. in the world of Web3. One thing to put Web3 in perspective is Web1 was also the invention of the cookie. You know, right at the beginning, 1994, that's when a young engineer at Netscape called Lou Montulli, you know, invented the cookie. Just to give websites some intelligence so that they would recognize people when they come instead of starting all over again every time. And he didn't want this to make it trackable.
Oops.
A year later, unfortunately, trackability was invented and then purchased by one of these big platforms company for several billion dollars. But the reality is one thing that's happening is the cookie is going away because of everything we know, GDPR, regulation. You know, customer realization that, you know, there's so much data about them out there that they don't own and they should own. So, you know, and there is this shift towards first party data, and then enter zero party data, which is, you know, my data is my data. And that's the world of Web3. Mm-hmm. And that's the basically time period we are in. People have started to really realize that their identity is theirs. And that by taking back control of it, they're going to expand the possibilities of what they can do, but also who they can be. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really what's going to be interesting is the big transformation for me that's going to come in the years to come with Web3 is going to be around identity. We talk a lot about self-sovereign identity, and I like to talk about self-sovereignty, which is people, you know, basically realizing that they can take back more control of their body and their mind and fulfill a life that's much richer than what we could do in the previous, you know, versions of the world where you didn't have that realization of the potentiality, mm-hmm. that are around you.
I love that. So when thinking about the commerce space, I mean, how should companies think about playing in this world? I mean, how not only should their brand be showing up, but then how should they be finding new customers in a world where you can't operate, you know, in the same way that you used to operate? You can't attract new customers and, you know, track them like you used to. Like, not only how should they show up there, but then how should they find new customers and interact with them?
Yeah, so there's lots of ways to skin this cat and answer that question. The reality is, first of all, I mean, you talk about commerce. One of the big changes that is already happening and is going to continue to happen is the fact that people are going to realize that cryptocurrencies are another currency that you can use to make commerce. And I'm amazed by the number of companies that are in an accelerated pace, despite all the ups and downs of cryptos, that are starting to accept or planning to accept cryptocurrencies in the foreseeable future. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, of course, what's interesting is that you can buy digital goods, you can buy an NFT, you can buy skins for the metaverse, etc. But you can also buy them together with a product as a digital twin, and then they are part of the product. But you can also dissociate them from the product, and then they become brand. So suddenly you have a proposition where commerce and marketing are becoming really, and it's been a while in the making. I've always said when I was, my first role, which was a while ago, I was always fascinated by the competition between sales and marketing. And I always said, well, the two functions really should collaborate. Mm-hmm. Well, now they have to, because the reality, a single NFT can be, a financial proposition, but can also be a brand proposition, a marketing proposition, and can be therefore become an asset. And then you add the people, the role of the people as a community that no longer want to be, but can be much more than consuming your product. They can actually collaborate and co-create with you. And the power of the individual and the community of fans, participating truly in your business, because they are not just participating in building the brand. If they participate in building the brand by being active members of a community, they are going to want a stake. Mm-hmm. They are going to want a cut, and that's why you see this decentralization movement is not just decentralization of technology. It's also, I think, the transformation of more and more people being able to participate and benefit from the internet.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, it's interesting because you see these way more niche communities popping up. And it seems like there's a lot of new opportunities that companies have to reach these, much more niche consumers who maybe did not have a group to talk in before. They couldn't find their people. And now all of a sudden you see, NFTs popping up around a space that you've never even heard of, that maybe it was on some subreddit forum, some thread that was like deep down where you couldn't find it. Now all of a sudden people are finding each other and actually have ways to, either gamify it or have a community or have tokens around something, whatever it is. But it's interesting watching like all these new opportunities pop up to connect with people.
When I joined Salesforce, I talked with my boss and he said, you need to write a book, Mark. And I said, the working title, and I've not written it yet, but is Your Brand is Your Community. Mm-hmm. But it was a totally this power of the community to actually play a new role, a very active role, and take ownership of your proposition. But I love the way you say, I often talk indeed about not just communities, but micro communities. Mm-hmm. And I have this theory that a community should be 10,000, 20,000, 25,000. But if you go to 1 million, 2 million, it's not a community, it's an audience. And we're back to, old school marketing. Mm-hmm. So to me, what brands are going to need to do is to actually continuously segment their communities into micro community to keep that little tribal, subculture that you're talking about, mm-hmm. so that they really feel that they're one. They all feel like the people in that community are all like me, and I want to be like them, to be with them. It's a little bit like nation forming. Mm-hmm. You choose the neighborhood, you choose the people you want to hang out based on certain regions, because this place, as certain values, certain passions that are more prevalent in this one or amongst this group than amongst that group. And I think that it's going to be fascinating to see how we resist the temptation as communities grow of making them bigger versus keeping them small, which is going to require changing structure, because if you have an audience of 1 million, it's one thing. But if you have 100, 1,000 micro communities of thousands of people, it's going to require community management. It's going to require, you know, a lot of new skills mm-hmm. that organizations don't have. And on top of it, which is fascinating, is going back to your question around commerce, those communities are going to be communities that are going to co-create your brand, but also co-grow your business. And you're going to be able to sell them products, and they're going to be able to sell your products for you. So it changes completely the role. And that's what I believe is powerful about decentralization.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of gets back to, I think it was Kevin Kelly talking about the 1,000 true fans. But if that's the way the world is headed right now, it seems like all the metrics that marketers and commerce leaders rely on right now are kind of go out the door, because they're going to be looking at, okay, what should average retention be, or, you know, average order values, and all these numbers that once you actually have a really engaged community, all the benchmarks that you're used to will not make sense anymore. They're all going to be much higher because you have people who really want, hopefully, what you're selling.
Yes and no, because I do think that, you know, there is a limit to the number of communities that you can actively participate mm-hmm. in. So I think there are going to be, you know, a few communities that are going to become, you know, not just what you're part of, but who you are. It's going to become identity forming. And then we're still going to, by definition, also have relationships with, you know, brands, and that are going to be far less personal, far less intimate. I always think Web3 is an and, not an or.
Got it. Mm-hmm.
Now it's going to be additive, both in terms of commerce, in terms of marketing, in terms of relationship. But it is going to, and I agree with you on that point, it is going to create a total new, you know, go-to-market, new places with new products and new revenue streams that people had not envisaged before.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I love a good example. So are there any companies doing this well right now when it comes to the micro communities, engaging with them? Maybe they're creating some NFTs, like anyone that you're watching in this space right now?
I mean, there are quite a few brands that have done a very good job. The classical ones that come to mind would be, you know, like Adidas or Gucci. Mm-hmm. What was interesting in those examples is that they really engaged with their community before they actually tried to make something, you know, big. They were very much sharing their roadmap, you know, recruiting the community. Instead of trying to sell something to the community. Mm-hmm. And I find that what's going to be interesting, you're going to see two very opposite ways, which can both be valid, of using this new internet. One is to recruit new users and say there is this, you know, group of, you know, either, you know, Generation Alpha, which is going to be the biggest generation ever, 2.5 billion people that are going to be Web3 native, but all those, you know, Web3 native crypto fans, etc. That's one way you can recruit that generation and those people for your brand, and that you need to do it without using any of the scale methods. And then you're going to have some other brands that are going to say, no, I have a big fan base. I want to use, you know, Web3 NFTs to make my fan base, you know, more loyal. And I think that can work too. But in some cases, and that's why we see a heavy focus on luxury, on fashion, et cetera, because it requires a big enough user base that is already ready to accept mm-hmm. Web3 marketing, Web3 techniques, crypto, and so on.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely makes sense for luxury. We had on a previous guest, Annika, and she was from NYU and studied the luxury space and then worked at another company too. And she was talking about that was the top space to have NFTs for, just because of making sure there's not counterfeits and being able to actually resell your product. And yeah, I was just seeing so many use cases when thinking about that space that I'm sure there are many, many more. But
yeah, there is one of the conversations we're having a lot with indeed luxury companies, with car companies and so on, is the fact that for them, there is something really powerful in the using blockchain and NFTs together with certificate of authenticity, certificate of ownership. Mm-hmm. And so that you're able to have, you know, a combination of the product, the brand, and a level of trust, if you want, that you can put inside a smart contract. Mm-hmm. And that's really something which I believe is a very interesting use case. One of the conversations I always have when we start with brands is, what are you trying to do? What's your brand and what's the utility that you can only have using NFTs or, you know, Web3 that you couldn't, you know, realize mm-hmm. with current, you know, marketing techniques and commerce techniques? Because if you can do it right now, you know, with classical e-commerce or, you know, social marketing or whatever, then it's probably not good enough. You really need to think hard to think what's the really and unique utility that you can unlock for your consumers and your communities with Web3.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. I always think about old problems that could be solved with new technology. Like if you mentioned cars earlier, and I'm like, what if you just put the service history on the blockchain and you had the service provider, you know, check off on it? I mean, you get all these used cars now and you're like, I don't know what happened to this car. I don't know if they ever got an oil change in their life before. But so many old problems like that, that you could instantly solve with technology.
But then, you know, if you take your analogy of, you know, how many times has this car been serviced? Well, yeah. You can do the same with a human being. Mm-hmm. How many times has this person been serviced? And then you suddenly
insurance.
Can think about insurance. Exactly. You said it. So,
yeah.
You know, we're having fascinating conversation with, mm-hmm. with all the industries. And as much as, that's why going back to the beginning of our conversation, I really believe that the killer use case where there's going to be really game-changing utility have not been seen yet, have not been identified. And they may take years, mm-hmm. you know, before they come. And it's something like, but you're right. I mean, insurance and health could be, you know, game-changed by Web3 NFT. Not to ask the question of, will avatars have digital health needs?
Mm. Probably. No. I don't want to get hacked. I want my avatar to have something to protect it.
So I think that it's going to be really, really interesting to explore this strange new world in the years to come.
Yeah. Yeah. I see. I don't know if you've seen some of the apps that have tokens and they're paying their users to run and work out. And I'm like, oh, I wonder if they're thinking about the long game here of how they're going to plug into insurance companies.
Yeah. We'll yeah. The whole play to earn mm-hmm. model, which you're talking about, a game changer that can be unlocked to these technologies. And it comes from the mentality of gaming, you know, the experience of gaming. But now it can be translated mm-hmm. into all kind of other industries.
Yeah.
Thanks to blockchain.
Hey there. Are you enjoying the show so far? Well, imagine your company's advertising placed right in this very spot during a future interview with another elite e-commerce mind. Imagine your messaging and logo directly connected to the industry's most prominent innovators and thought leaders, distributed across every major podcast platform and social network. Yeah, well, it's time to stop imagining. Learn how you can partner with UpNext in Commerce and sponsor this very show. Reach out to me at stephanie@mission.org and let's have a conversation. If you were to pick maybe a component of Web3 that you're most excited about for commerce companies, like brands specifically, I mean, what would you choose and why? Like, which one are you, you know, you think will have the biggest impact in the next 5 years, not like the next 20?
Yeah, one thing that I often say is wrong. We talk about customer lifetime value as if it's a KPI for the CFO. Mm-hmm. You know, how much money can we make with this customer? And in reality, I often say customer lifetime value is a KPI for the customer. How do you make sure that you create enough value for the customer for, you know, the rest of his life? And that therefore you nurture your relationship with that person in a way where you don't just sell him a product and then you expect to sell him another product, but you serve his needs on and on and on as his or her needs evolve. And I think that in the end, Web3 for me is really a very powerful and quite noble way of, you know, building even deeper and more meaningful and more connected, you know, relationships mm-hmm. with your audience, and being able to do them, you know, for life. And that's where there is really, because when you are so close to that community, the community, you know, co-creates with you. The community, you know, helps solve the problem with you. Mm-hmm. So the unity, your community becomes part of your roadmap of product development, of new services offering. And it becomes a virtuous circle mm-hmm. that really can create value in the long term. So to go back to your question, it's the power of the relationship. And maybe, you know, it's not just about customer lifetime value, but community lifetime value.
Yeah.
And in a way, in a world where the community, you know, becomes a true stakeholder, not just a consumer.
Yeah, it feels like it's reverting back to the early days of retail, way back in the day when the stores were kind of developed with the owner and the community deciding what should we order. Like, they all knew each other. The person would come in, they would already have their stuff ready. I mean, it feels like history is coming back in a different way now. Like, how do you actually understand the person who's visiting your store, wherever that is, whether it's digital, in person, the metaverse? It feels like it's just repeating itself in a different way.
Yeah, and I think that it's a very good observation. I think that we've gone to the place where now, thanks to, you know, all the technologies, and also a little bit thanks to the post-COVID world, where everybody has now completely, you know, embraced digital technology, digital tools. You're right that this omni-channel approach now is a given for everyone. Mm-hmm. And therefore, this ability to connect all the data and use all of that data in a way to make us, and therefore to make brands, maybe a little bit more human again, mm-hmm. you know, by understanding yeah. better, by being, oddly enough, through a digital solution, being actually closer to their customers than ever before. Mm-hmm. And I feel that a lot of companies have thought for years that they were selling directly to consumers. I know that I tried to sell directly to consumers when I was at Coca-Cola, Unilever, mm-hmm. you know, Samsung. But the reality, in most cases, we used intermediaries both to sell the product and to deliver the message. And what's beautiful in this new world is that you can go direct, truly, you know, both to sell the product and to deliver the message. Mm-hmm.
So one thing that's interesting I think about is, how do we get outside of our mindset of, you know, what's valuable and into the mindset of the younger consumer? I know you mentioned Gen Alpha earlier, because to me, oftentimes I'm thinking about digital goods and, you know, I'm in this, you know, Fortnite and I'm going to buy some digital good. And it's hard for me to really understand, only because I did not grow up that way and I don't really understand the value there. But how do you think about digital goods and, you know, kind of keeping up with, are these actual trends or is this a fad of buying these digital goods?
So I remember 10, 15 years ago, asking, you know, when I was going to do customer visits in the house, one day I was in India and I was asking what was the most desired thing that the person would want to have. The kid that was next to it says, he was 9 years old, he said, "Oh, an iPhone, the latest iPhone. I want the latest iPhone." That's what, and that was very much, you know, web two. Mm-hmm. I have a nephew who is 9 years old, you know, he cares more about the skins that he has in Fortnite than the actual t-shirts that he has in his wardrobe. Mm-hmm. And that's the mindset shift that you're talking about. And you're right, that it's difficult for us to realize, but Gen Alpha, they take their digital identity as seriously, if not more seriously, than their physical identity. They change skins, they change profile picture, you know, every single day. So if not several times a day. And it's true that you think, you know, if I'm going for dinner tonight, I might need to change and dress differently. But they think exactly the same thing in the digital world. And what's fascinating is that then it gives them the ability to identify and realize different parts of their identities with different micro communities in ways that was, you know, before not possible. And I feel that it's going to be really interesting. It can sound a little bit complex, but I think it's going to be really interesting to see how Web3 can be a solution to fight some of the prejudices and inequalities that, you know, are prevalent in our world.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, now all of a sudden, anyone, anywhere can mostly have access to play in the same space and to be able to, you know, buy something for much cheaper than it would be in the real world. And I mean, it is exciting seeing, you know, how it's kind of bringing so many more people together in a way that just didn't really exist before.
Exactly. And we're not there. We're not there clearly because, you know, right now there is still a limited, you know, distribution. And but my hope indeed, in terms of adoption, people say we're more or less in the equivalent of 1998, 1999 of the internet one adoption curve. So it's following the same adoption, you know, pace as the internet in its very early stage, but we are only at the beginning. So I'm personally excited about the possibilities, and I'm not that worried about, you know, some of the things you talked about. Is it a fad? You said, you know, is it only, you know, benefiting a few people? I think that it's normal when you have a new product, a new technology, you know, it's not going to hit everyone at once, but I truly believe that it has that potential.
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree. It's interesting because I feel like from the outside, when you look at, you know, how the media talks about this world, is usually pretty pessimistic. It might just be following Bitcoin's price for the day. And a lot of people, you know, might think of it as this like hype cycle. But then when you look behind the scenes, there's a lot of things already being implemented, you know, whether it's blockchain, like you mentioned earlier. I mean, people were like, oh, blockchain, it's not even a thing. I'm like, well, look at actually like the infrastructure is changing behind the scenes at some of the largest companies that were making fun of it back in the day. Like the JP Morgans of the world are using this technology. And that's what I think isn't talked about enough. It's like how this is actually bubbling up, but it's not easy to tell from the hype that, you know, you see from the media. And of course, all of the stuff around NFTs where, you know, there's probably a couple valuable ones and maybe a lot of hype, but it's hard to tell what's actually happening.
I think you're absolutely right that the beauty about NFTs is that it was really the first use case that grabbed people's imagination, attention, you know, really fast. And people suddenly realized, oh, but the reality, until we talked about Web3 and until we talked about blockchain and until we talked about crypto, most people didn't see the utility. Suddenly NFT made people realize, oh, there is a utility. I really believe that we're only at the beginning of unlocking new utilities. And that's what's exciting.
Yeah, I love it. Very optimistic, my favorite kind of guest. So I like hearing where your mind is at.
No, but it's, I think, you know, I love, and it's funny, I was on a panel with the CMO of Ledger, a crypto wallet, a few days ago. And she was saying, Mark, you and I are both, you know, always only seeing the possibilities. So I am an optimist.
Yeah, me too.
But I really think that when you see a new technology that is undoubtedly the next internet, I mean, there is no doubt for me about the fact that the internet had several phases and we're entering a new technology phase. On top of it, that new phase, which is also exciting, is that we're entering it with not only a new technology, but also a new mindset. We understand much more now about, you know, sustainability, about ethics, you know, about, so we're actually able to take the almost the challenges of the world and of society and of individuals. And I really think that, we're going to realize in the future that there are lots of things that in Web 1 and Web 2 we could have done better. And I hope that we course correct using the power of this new technology.
Yeah, I think there will be. I mean, it does feel like in many ways we'll look back and be like, well, it feels like we built the internet very blindly in those stages because now where we're at, I mean, even though it's, you know, distributed and open, it's also pretty traceable and you can put new rules into this internet in a way that, you know, is very hard to do in Web 2.
Yeah, I think I always go back to the internet dream at the beginning. And I think we all agree that the execution didn't fully deliver on the dream. There were lots of great things and I wouldn't want, you to go back and say, let's take the internet away because it's not good enough.
Yeah, no, yeah. Gotta try.
It's great. It's great. But yeah. With all the hindsight now, we can really, and that's what we see on lots of other technologies. The more you advance, the more you take advantage of the learnings. And that's what I hope. And that's why all the negativity, of course, there is always going to be with everything. You know, you can use it for good reasons and for bad reasons. And there were always going to be, you know, some elements of the Web3 world that because of some of the principles, you will have people that, you know, will try to do scams, et cetera. But
always, yeah.
You know, scams have existed, you know, probably since the very early stage of humanity.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. So my last question for you, you know, for someone who's listening right now, a brand, a company, maybe they're an executive at a company and they're wondering, how can I even get involved in this space? What would you recommend to them?
So I really feel that it's a great time for experimentation. I feel that both personal experimentation and also experimentation with a small brand, a small project, et cetera. But the first thing is experiment yourself. People who say, how do I get into this? The first thing they should do is themselves get into this. Mm-hmm. Create a wallet, you know, buy some cryptos. You don't need to buy a lot. Yep. Buy an NFT, mint an NFT. Mm-hmm. And just going through that process is the best way from not only experimenting yourself, but also because you're not going to be sure you do it right, you're going to go and try to learn. So you're going to go to some communities. If you buy an NFT, you're going to join a community of that NFT, probably on Discord. Mm-hmm. You're going to realize suddenly that LinkedIn and Twitter have a whole layer for, you know, Web3 interested people. Mm-hmm. And you're going to start to follow people and try to learn from, you know, the early stage that you're not. So it's going to, and so that's the first thing. And then experiment with, you know, in the marketplace. But again, don't do it if you are not clear about the utility. Mm-hmm. It's not about, you know, creating a piece of art and selling it. That's going to, you know, maybe sell for very cheap, but it's not going to teach you much because it's going to die right after this. Mm-hmm. So there are indeed quite a lot of resources out there once you start to fall into the rabbit hole. And that's my third advice, maybe, is make sure that you want to do it because it's addictive.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly once you start to enter, and you start to want to learn, you want to learn more. And as a field that is, you know, still expanding exponentially on a daily basis, then you will not have enough time in your days and your nights to learn enough. Mm-hmm. And certainly it's all the people I know who practice, you know, Web3, have expanded the number of hours that they spend, you know, every day on trying to learn, trying to understand. It's fascinating. It's also a very tight community. So it's a very helping community because the mindset of decentralization is also a mindset of collaboration.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love the idea of, skin in the game, especially. That's what I always say. I remember back in, I think, 2012 or 13, I was like, you know, I want to figure out what this Bitcoin thing is. And I spent $900 on a couple of Bitcoin. And instantly my mind was like, well, where'd that money go? Where did I just transfer it to? What's happening with it? And you start all of a sudden kind of forcing yourself to follow along with these new things because you actually have your own money in it and you want to explore, you know, what this thing is. So love that idea and great advice. Mark, thanks so much for coming on the show today. Where can people follow along with all the new things you're learning and doing? Where can they find you?
The best place is probably LinkedIn. LinkedIn is indeed, as I just mentioned, a very active Web3 community. And once you start to follow a few people, then you'll discover lots of other people that, you know, comment and that add, and then you'll start to follow those people too. And that's the best way to engage. And as I said, it's very responsive. So very often I see people using, you know, LinkedIn, not just to comment, but to ask questions, and some people answer. So that's the beauty of it, is that it's another way of learning.
I love that. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. Thank you, Stephanie. And for all of you who have listened and who will be tempted to go into the rabbit hole, well, all the best, good luck, and have a lot of fun.
Hey, listeners, thanks for tuning into this episode. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you haven't already, please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. It helps spread the word, and I would greatly appreciate it. See you next time. Thank you for checking out another epic hour of business insights and inspiration on the Up Next in Commerce podcast. If you like what you've heard and you're interested in partnering with us to bring your brand to a growing audience of e-commerce experts, reach out to me at stephanie@mission.org to get the conversation started.